thank you. So this is going to sort of follow along the lines of Josh's talk this morning, so I have the easier task of following him, so you guys already introduced the problem. So I'd like to talk today... All right, so I'd like to talk about today is sort of give a brief overview of the problem itself, okay, and talk about spreading mechanisms, specifically thermocapillarity and wetting versus spreading, okay? Then I'd like to talk about sort of quasi-static spreading, all right, and axial versus radial thermal gradients in this problem, then biostability, and finally the effect of the applied temperature profile in this problem. So as Joshua was talking about this morning, what they have at Duke is the following apparatus. So they have a rotating container, okay, with which we can place a drop on there, and they have the ability to differentially heat this solid substrate. All right. So a drop of liquid placed on a differentially heated solid substrate can spread for a variety of reasons. Okay. Some of these reasons are body forces, such as gravity or centrifugal forces, which everyone's pretty familiar with. One that is sort of surfactant-like is thermal capillarity. All right. Here we assume that the surface tension is some function, local function of temperature. All right. And finally, a drop can spread from contact forces. Here, what I'm talking about is wetting. Okay. So in the static sense, traditionally, this liquid-gas interface is held by surface tension, sigma liquid gas, and similarly, there's surface tensions at the liquid-solid and the solid-gas substrates. And the balance of forces there defines the static contact angle. And the degree of wetting is specified through the static contact angle. So what I'd like to do today is talk about all these forces, or a lot of them together, okay, with the goal in mind that competition can lead to instabilities in this problem. All right. So like I said before, these are sort of motivated by experiments by Joshua of the Beringer Group at Duke University. All right. So what I'd like you to draw your attention to is that a non-uniformly heated substrate, okay, in this problem, there's actually three characteristic temperatures. All right. So there's a horizontal temperature difference, and there's also a vertical temperature difference that's controlled by the heat transfer across this liquid-gas interface. All right. So there we go. All right. So in classic Marangoni-driven flow, okay, the shear stress is proportional to the difference in temperatures. Here we have two differences in temperatures, one that's directed along the horizontal component, delta TH, and one that's directed across the vertical component, delta TV. All right. And just like with surfactant-driven flows, okay, flows are driven in thermal capillarity via shear stresses. So here the shear stress is proportional to the gradient in temperature, and we're going to assume a linear equation of state for the surface tension. So here, surface tension is proportional linearly to temperature. All right. And like I said before, we have two different radial gradients. We have two different thermal gradients. One is radial, okay, and for the purposes of this talk, I'm going to assume that the center of the drop at the axis of symmetry is hot and the contact line is cold. That's positive n hat. And similarly, there's an axial gradient from heat transfer. All right. So once again, positive m hat will be a uniformly heated substrate, okay, and a cool apex of the drop. So the interesting thing here is that you can expect, if we do this sort of thin film approximation, that it's not necessarily the horizontal temperature gradient that drives the most flow, okay, because in the thin film approximation, the axial component in distance is much smaller than the radial component in distance, okay, so that therefore you could believe that you could have much larger temperature gradients in the axial direction. Okay, so next, let's talk a little bit about wetting and spreading and how we're going to sort of couple this to our model. All right. So traditionally, when we talk about wetting, what we're doing is we're basically modeling microscopic effects using macroscopic quantities. Okay, so this is sort of equivalent to what you do in solid mechanics when you talk about strain and stress fields. Okay, so on some level, this is a microscopic phenomenon, but we introduce these things called strains and stresses to model these properties. In the same way, okay, there are microscopic forces at this contact line, van der Waals forces, but we choose to model them through this static contact angle, which we call cosine theta A. All right, and this cosine theta A represents the balance of forces here. So wetting, we're referring to statics in general. All right, When we want to talk about spreading, okay, we want to talk about dynamics. So as I said before, this cosine, this theta A is just a material parameter, okay? They call it the contact angle, okay? But it's just related to the surface tensions, all right? So if your instantaneous contact angle is different than your static contact angle, okay, this balance of, this results in an imbalance of forces that's going to drive some type of flow. In surface tension-driven problems, a typical constitutive law is to say that the contact line velocity is proportional to the difference between the instantaneous contact angle and the static contact angle, provided we introduce this mobility exponent m. So this has been done a lot in literature. Typically, m is 1 or 3, okay? And experimentally, this is what the sort of contact line law looks like. Here, theta A and theta R are the advancing and receding static contact angles, and the difference here is what's known as contact angle hysteresis. Okay. So like I said before, this is the problem we're going to consider. We're going to consider centrifugal forces, thermal capillarity, gravity, and we're going to choose two applied temperature distributions. Okay, so the first one we're going to choose is a linear temperature distribution on a solid substrate, and the second one we're going to choose is a logarithmic temperature distribution on a substrate. Now, in Joshua's experiments, what they do is they pointwise heat the outside of the container and uniformly cool the center. So if you solve Laplace's equations with these boundary conditions, you generate a logarithmic temperature profile. All right. In practice, this can be approximated sometimes using just a linear temperature profile. However, in the end, we'll see that the difference between this type of heating and this type of heating is fairly great with respect to the results I'm going to present today. T sub n is just the sort of non-uniform part of the applied temperature. Okay, so T zero is just some sort of reference temperature. All right. So solution method, I'm going to spare everyone this, okay, because, you know, there's a lot of mathematicians in the room. I know everyone knows what the thin film equation looks like. So I'm going to sort of schematically sketch out what the solution method is. Basically what we have is we have a drop domain, okay, bounded by this liquid gas interface, and this contact line, which we call A of T. This is the contact line radius. All right. Inside this drop domain, we specify the flow field using a velocity field, a pressure field, and a temperature field. All right, so we can write down the field equations for this problem, VPT, the interface shape H, and the contact line radius A, and apply the lubrication approximation. What this does is this effectively allows us to write down an equation for the interface shape H and the contact line radius A, okay, where the velocity field, pressure field, and temperature field are implicitly defined through this evolution equation. All right, I'm going to take this one step further because what we really want to do in this talk is consider a lot of different spreading forces. I'm going to make the quasi-static approximation. So here what we can do is take the evolution equation, okay, which depends upon the interface shape and the contact line radius, okay, and do a little manipulation, okay, and reduce this to a sort of one-dimensional problem for the contact line radius itself. And the reason why we do this is that things are a lot cleaner, okay. This is sort of like a first pass at this problem. So this is something that you might do naturally if you're just introduced to a problem. Alright, so what is quasi-static spreading? Okay, so quasi-static spreading, okay, what we have is we have a steady droplet shape. Okay, so remember H is the interface shape. Alright, so this equation specifies a steady droplet shape that's in equilibrium with respect to pressure. So this satisfies the Young-Laplace equation, okay, where the balance of pressures in the liquid to the gas are balanced. Alright, and in here we have a bond number, which represents the effect of gravity, a centrifugal number, which represents the effect of centrifugal forces, and we have two Marangoni numbers. One is the radial Marangoni number, and the second is the axial Marangoni number, which characterize the temperature gradients in the radial and the vertical directions. And in quasi-static spreading, because this droplet shape is steady, okay, it satisfies the Young-Laplace equation, you might ask, what drives motion? All right? So what drives motion is the imbalance of contact line forces. All right? So a droplet placed on a substrate, okay, has to satisfy two conditions to be in equilibrium. The first being that it satisfies the Young-Laplace equation, or the pressure balance across this liquid-gas interface, and the second is that its forces have to balance at the contact line. So in quasi-static spreading, what we have is a droplet shape that satisfies the Young-Laplace equation, but not the Young-Dupree equation. and the motion here is driven by the imbalance of forces at the contact line. So essentially what we're doing is, you know, we start with our field equations, we make the lubrication approximation, so we map the problem to the interface, and then we make this quasi-static spreading approximation, and we map the problem to the contact line. So what we have done is implicitly defined the interface shape as well as all of the field quantities. Okay, so I'm outlining the results here. Like I said, there's a large parameter space, so it's going to help to organize these results. So we're going to look at equilibrium solutions, okay, flow fields under these conditions, and the path to equilibrium in this quasi-static spreading regime. All right. So to do that, we're going to sort of start out real basic and then sort of take little perturbations and move forward. So I'm going to review isothermal spreading, okay? Then I'm going to set a linear temperature distribution, okay, and consider small heating. All right, and then I'm going to look at the isorotational spreading and look at the comparison between axial and radial thermal gradients. All right, and then see what the effect is of coupling these two together, and I'll show the competition leads to bistability. All right, and finally, I'll look at the logarithmic temperature distribution and see how this compares to experimental results. All right, so in isothermal spreading in this quasi-static spreading regime, remember the equilibrium shapes. The interface shapes are in equilibrium, okay, and the sort of governing contact line law can be written in this form, okay. So this just relates the contact line radius A, okay, to the parameters theta A, which is like the static contact angle, and G, which is the bond number. So in this regime, okay, the flow is as such, okay. So flow is driven down to the contact line. This type of motion, okay, sort of to get a feel for what this contact line spreading law looks like, it's, you know, of use to look at the g equals zero versus g equals non-zero limit. All right. So the spreading law just basically says that the greater the deviation of your contact angle from equilibrium, the faster it's going to move. Okay. So remember, these are equilibrium shapes. Okay. So it's, for a given volume, these are both equilibrium shapes. All right. But the g equals 20 equilibrium shape is going to move faster because this contact angle is greater than the g is equal to zero. Equilibrium shape. And you can take the two limits, and these limits sort of jive with what I just told you. Okay, in the gravity dominant spreading regime, the contact line radius goes like 1 over 2 t to the 1 over 2 m plus 1, and the surface tension dominant limit, this goes to like 1 over t to the 3 m plus 1. And these have been verified by Tanner and Chen in literature. So these are fairly standard results for isothermal spreading. Okay, so like I said before, we're going to take sort of small perturbations off this base case, all right? So what I'd like to do first is look at the axial gradient versus radial gradient. So what I'm going to do is, in this case, I'm just going to heat the substrate. This has been done by Earhart and Davis, okay? And I'm going to compare that to a sort of radial temperature gradient exclusively with no axial temperature gradient. And we're going to look at the associated flow fields and droplet shapes, all right? So if you uniformly heat a drop on the substrate, all right, you have a hot contact line, okay, and a cool apex, all right. This drives flow from the contact line to the axis of symmetry, resulting in a recirculation cell as such, okay. This type of motion tends to decrease the contact angle, all right. So this is increasing the axial Marangoni number. So remember that if you decrease the contact angle, you slow down the spreading rate. All right, so this just says that if you uniformly heat the solid substrate, you slow down your spreading rate. Conversely, if you uniformly cool the solid substrate, you can increase your spreading rate. All right, something similar happens if with a radial temperature gradient. Here, remember that the convention was a hot axis of symmetry and a cool contact line. So here the flow is driven from the axis of symmetry to the contact line, resulting in this type of recirculation cell. This type of flow tends to increase the contact angle and therefore increase the spreading rate, according to the contact line law. So these things look sort of similar, okay? Basically do the same thing, interface shapes look the same. The big difference here is the approach to equilibrium, okay? So for this type of heating condition with both axial and radial gradients, the contact line radius obeys this contact line law, all right? And the biggest difference here is the sort of retraction rates. So one of the experiments that was done by Shamik Mukhopadhyay and Bob Berenger was to show that a drop of liquid can be made to retract under a sufficiently big thermal gradient. And the question is, they obtained a sort of strange scaling law for this type of retraction. So the question is it this axial gradient that's doing the work of making it retract, or is it the radial gradient? And you can see that there's a very large difference in the sort of power laws for this retracting behavior. We'll come back to this later. So what I'd like to look at now is sort of competition, okay? So we looked at axial and radial gradients exclusively. Now what I'd like to look at is sort of combinations of axial and radial gradients. And the question is, how do you arrange these things where they compete? Okay, so you can arrange these things where they work in concert, or you can arrange these gradients where they work in competition. Like I said before, competition leads to instabilities. So what I'd like to point you out here is that you can have these things working in competition if you have a radial gradient directed inward, okay, while you simultaneously cool the solid substrate, or if you uniformly heat the solid substrate and have a radial gradient directed outward. And the question is, which one is interesting? All right. So if we want to look at equilibrium, okay, we can look at the equilibrium of the equation as showed, okay, and we can just use Descartes' rule of signs to show that under this configuration, okay, there's one or three possible equilibriums for these type of thermal conditions, whereas for this other type of competition, there's either zero or two equilibrium states. All right. Despite the fact that these flows are very similar, there's two recirculation cells and one saddle point under these types of flow conditions. So what we have in these regions of one or three is that we can have a region of bistability. Okay, so what I'm showing here is the equilibrium contact line radius as it depends upon the axial Marangoni number for some fixed radial Marangoni number. And what you see is that for a given set of experimental conditions, you can have two equivalent equilibrium configurations, okay, for one set of parameters. So it's called bistability. We can look at the stability of these just by looking at plotting the vector field, or equivalently defining a Lyapunov function, because this is a one-dimensional ODE, and looking at the energy landscape. So how these things are distinguished is in their approach to equilibrium. So we look at equilibrium, okay, and in some sense, quasi-static spreading is the first perturbation off of equilibrium calculations. Okay, so it's sort of like the sort of slow spreading speed where surface tension is dominant. And you'll see that in these bistability regions, there's no real power law dependence depending upon what the dominant force is, but you do see interesting interface shapes. So these things can be drop-like, capillary ridge-like, dimpled-like interfaces, or you can have sort of interface shapes that where they have a sort of bulk region and a contact line region where things are essentially decoupled. So from the sort of simple model, you know, there's a lot of interesting things that are happening here. So one thing we want to address is that, I've talked with Joshua a lot about this, is that to achieve bistability, we need heat transfer. Okay, so we need to develop an axial thermal gradient in the drop. All right, this is not always possible. Okay, so the question is there something else that we can do to control this? Remember, so to achieve bistability, the axial gradient was the one that wanted to spread. Okay, so the question is, can we find another type of force, another type of spreading mechanism that will replace the effect of the axial gradient? And the sort of short answer is yes, so we can use centrifugal effects. Okay, so in this case, the equilibrium equation looks something like this. Here we have four parameters: radial thermal gradient, radial Marangoni number, centrifugal number, axial Marangoni number, and the contact angle. And the sort of punchline is that centrifugal forces can replace or overcome the effect of heat transfer. So here, without the effect of heat transfer, we can still have bistability, as shown in these regions, these tongues, where there's a three located here. What I'm plotting is just the axial Marangoni number versus the radial Marangoni number. And these tongues are regions where bistability is to occur, parameterized by the centrifugal number. All right. And the other interesting thing that can happen is that if you look at this m equals 0 limit, this is no heat transfer, you can have bistability. Or conversely, okay, when m is greater than 0, you can still have bistability, right? Which is the opposite of what we needed without the centrifugal effects, which is sort of interesting, and it's nice because centrifugal effects are more easily controlled experimentally than this heat transfer. All right, so the last thing I want to talk about is what is the difference between the linear profile and the logarithmic profile, which actually occurs in Jastrow's experiments. So in the logarithmic profile, okay, we have a radial gradient that looks like 1 over r. This gives rise to a sort of contact line equation as such. The only difference here is remember that the effect of the radial Marangoni number and the centrifugal number were decoupled in the last problem. Here, they're coupled together in this lump parameter. Okay, so we sort of lose that unfolding we had when we chose a linear temperature distribution. So the sort of not too nice thing is that we need heat transfer to achieve biostability in these regions. All right, but the nice thing is that with this logarithmic temperature profile, we can predict retraction rates consistent with what I reported in Mukhopadhyay and Behringer in this 2009 paper. And these are the parameters we use for these calculations, and these are all within the realm of possibilities for these types of spreading problems. So in conclusion, what to sort of take home with is that biostability and competition are sort of one and the same, all right? And for this experiment, okay, or for this problem, there's a lot of different physics that are competing, all right? And that competition can lead to biostability, all right? And also, centrifugal forces can enlarge regions of biostability. We can relax these thermal conditions. And like I sort of hinted before, that these can probably be more easily controlled experimentally than this sort of heat transfer problem, which is nice. And what I didn't talk about is mapping regions of an indefinite spreading. So in spin coating problems, all right, in coating problems, you'd like to know the conditions where you can, you know, completely coat a plate, all right? This analysis predicts this, although it wasn't the focus of this talk. And lastly, this is generalized to a lot of other heating conditions. And the sort of cool thing about this is that there's a lot of sort of microheaters that have been used in industry that can establish, you know, almost any type of gradient you want on these, any type of thermal gradient you want on these substrates. So knowing what type of thermal gradient we have to apply to coat fully the substrate and how fast we can coat it, is, you know, a lot of useful information. So, to that end, I'd like to thank Michael, Karen, and Joshua for many, many discussions on this problem.